This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The United States approves another massive military weapons supply to Ukraine worth $675 million. Washington plans more arms delivery amid war with Russia. The death toll from massive floods in Pakistan rises to 1,355 as the country reels from devastating impacts of the natural disaster. And the spokesman for Iran's Atomic Energy Organization says the IAEA's new report is a repetition of previous false allegations with political motivations. Thank you for joining us. The United States has pledged a massive military package for Ukraine amid the ongoing war with Russia.
And yesterday, the president approved the latest tranche of U.S. assistance to Ukraine, valued up to $675 million.
The package will include more ammunition, trucks, and anti-tank systems. The announcement was made during a meeting of defense ministers at the Ramstein Air Base in Germany. The U.S. has also unveiled nearly $2.7 billion in new military support to Ukraine and those neighbors Washington says are under threat from Russia. The foreign military financing program involves offering loans and grants to other countries to buy U.S.-made weapons. A State Department official says half of the new package will go to Ukraine and the rest to 18 other nations, including Moldova and Georgia, as well as several Baltic states. Italy has adopted energy-saving measures, including turning down thermostats as part of an EU plan to cut consumption. This as gas prices keep soaring amid the economic fallout of the Russia-Ukraine war. Max Civilli reports from Rome.
The Italian government has introduced a number of measures aimed at curbing electricity consumption this winter amid soaring gas prices and fears of more disruptions. Italy relies on natural gas for 40% of its electricity production. On Tuesday, Roberto Cingolani, the Minister for the Ecological Transition, announced energy-saving measures ranging from turning down thermostats in apartment blocks and public buildings by 1 degree and shortening the time the heating can be on by 1 hour a day and 15 days across the year.
It could be a solution, but on second thought, I don't know how useful this measure would be. What I do know is that it's always us people who pay the price.
Hospitals, nursing homes, primary and play schools will be exempt from the energy-saving measures. The policy introduced by the Italian government is part of an EU plan which calls on member states to voluntarily reduce their gas demand by 15% compared to their average consumption in the past 5 years between August 1st and March 31st next year. However, the gas demand reduction becomes mandatory if supplies reach crisis levels.
Italy has decided to do without the Russian gas, which amounted to about 40% of its supplies, and opted to embrace a supplier diversification strategy. Also, Germany did the same. Now it takes five members of the bloc to demand the European Council to make the energy saving plan mandatory. For instance, if Russia opts to cut altogether its gas supplies to Europe.
There are concerns on how the implementation of energy saving measures will be monitored by the government. For now, the Ministry for the Ecological Transition has called on individuals to play their part. It remains to be seen whether this will be enough. Max Civilli, Rome.
The economic impact of the Russia-Ukraine war has also hit France. Ramin Mazari has more on this story from Paris.
France and Europe have begun power restrictions unseen since the energy crisis 50 years ago in the hope of avoiding rolling blackouts, rationing, shuttered factories, and recession this winter. However, that was before European gas prices exploded after Russia cut gas flows 4 months earlier than Europe expected. At the current prices, energy bills across Europe will be up over 200% compared with last winter, and would absorb 20% of the average household's budget. On a macro level, such an increase will require 2 trillion euros in additional spending across the continent, equivalent to 15% of Europe's gross domestic product, all caused by sanctions on Russia over the unrest in Ukraine. Most analysts agree that Brussels' latest response to try and cap Russian gas prices is hollow, unenforceable, and certain to end all gas shipments from Russia. The far right is leading vital elections this month in Italy, and its leaders are running on an end to Russia sanctions because they say Italy is already on our knees.
We're only at the beginning of this problem, that's for sure. This energy crisis is going to last for 2 or 3 years, and that's at a minimum. It's not an exaggeration to say that Europe truly has no solutions, and that our leaders are merely engaging in wishful thinking.
French President Emmanuel Macron recently made waves by saying the country needs to prepare for an era defined by the end of abundance. However, many note that assumes that Ukraine will be the only unexpected crisis which Europe has to deal with in the coming months and years.
The government has predicted that the average annual inflation for all of 2022 will be 5%. However, from supply chain disruptions in China to more sanctions on Russia to austerity demands from Brussels, there's room for things to get even worse.
Will the astronomical gas prices cause Brussels and Washington to end their standoff with Moscow? The European street may have the final say this autumn. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Reports coming out of the UK's Buckingham Palace say doctors are concerned about Queen Elizabeth's health. They have recommended the 96-year-old remain under medical supervision. The Buckingham Palace says the Queen remains comfortable at her house in Balmoral, Scotland. A palace source says the Queen's immediate family members have been informed of her health condition. Prince Charles is now with the Queen and Prince William is travelling to her house after the announcement. Elizabeth II is the Queen of the United Kingdom and 14 other Commonwealth realms. Her reign began in February 1952. The death toll from flash floods in Pakistan continues to rise as people struggle to cope with the devastating impacts of the natural disaster. Authorities have reported 12 deaths in the past 24 hours. This brings the total number of fatalities to 1,355, which includes nearly 500 children. People in some parts of the country are building barriers against rising flood waters that have engulfed nearly a third of Pakistan after weeks of rain. The flooding has disrupted the lives of nearly 33 million people and is estimated to have caused losses of about $10 million. Hundreds of thousands have been forced from homes. The World Health Organization says more than 6 million people need humanitarian assistance in the flooded areas. The UN has called for $160 million in aid. Our Pakistan-based correspondent Nasser Kazmi has visited some of the flood-hit areas in the country. He gives us an update on the circumstances.
The infrastructure which is available at the moment with the government, they are trying their best to reach those people, but many of the people are still stranded in the flood waters in the southern part of Sindh, as well as in Balochistan. Many of the houses have been wiped away from those provinces, and people have no help at the moment. We have been visiting the flood-affected areas in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, which is one of the worst flood-affected province of Pakistan. Still water, many of houses are underwater in those regions. Now the water is affecting the Sindh province, and more rains are expected in days to come, as the Pakistan Meteorological Department has predicted that In the mid of September, there will be more rains in Pakistan. And meanwhile, the glaciers are also melting. So the heat wave in the country, same time, and the rains, they are affecting the people of Pakistan. And there are more fresh warnings about floods in those regions.
Iran has reacted to the latest report by the International Atomic Energy Agency on its nuclear program. Tehran says the agency needs to act professionally and remain independent and impartial. Iran's permanent representative to international organizations in Vienna says the IAEA is expected to stick with its duties regardless of political pressure. Mohsen Naziri warned the UN body of mischievous behavior by third parties that possess dozens of nuclear warheads. Naziri said the safeguards issues between Iran and the IAEA were closed under the 2015 resolution by the agency's board of governors. The Iranian envoy said his country has always had constructive cooperation with the agency. The Atomic Energy Organization of Iran also says the IAEA report contains no substantive material and that the agency is only playing politics with its repeated false allegations. It says Iran won't accept the monitoring of its nuclear activities beyond the safeguards agreement unless parties to the 2015 deal fulfill their obligations and remove the sanctions. In its new report, the IAEA has claimed Iran's stock uranium enriched to 60% purity is now enough for a nuclear bomb if enriched further. Political commentator Abbas Aslani says Israel is behind allegations against Iran's peaceful nuclear program by the International Atomic Energy Agency.
There are some points which need to be taken into account. One is the source of those claims. Those are, I mean, brought up by a party who is not a member to the, let's say, NPT, or they have nuclear warheads, meaning Israel. And they have clear stances vis-a-vis Iran as well as its nuclear activities. So for sure they will try to fabricate, let's say, evidences in order to say and claim that Iran's nuclear activities are not peaceful. And the third point is that, you know, the timing of these, let's say, issues is very important, because at the time that these issues have been among those remaining, let's say, outstanding issues at the table, we have been seeing that the Western parties to the nuclear deal, as well as the IAEA Director General, they have been trying to exaggerate and focus on those issues in order to put pressure on Tehran at the negotiating table to get more concessions. And that's why Iran argues that the other parties want to keep, let's say, these issues for future in order to use them as political pretext for, let's say, future, let's say, pressure against Tehran.
Iran reacts to the latest accusations raised at the 158th meeting of the Arab League's foreign ministers, calling them biased and uninformed. The foreign ministry spokesman says those allegations show certain governments have no proper understanding of the course of developments in West Asia and the realities on the ground. The Arab League meeting was held in the Egyptian capital, Cairo, on Tuesday. In the final communique, the participants accused Iran of interfering in the internal affairs of Arab states. Nasser Kanani advised those states to focus on Israel's atrocities against Palestinians instead of using such empty and repetitive rhetoric. According to the official, Tehran, as always, is ready to engage in meaningful dialogue with its neighbors and to settle misunderstandings through diplomacy. South Korea is proposing to hold a new round of talks with the neighboring North over the issue of family reunions.
The Korean government offers talks with North Korea to discuss a reunion of separated families. This government is not considering special incentives when it comes to this kind of humanitarian matter. North Korea should respond to this offer for a reunion of separated families as it is a humanitarian matter.
Seoul is hoping that officials from both sides could soon meet in person to discuss the issue of families in the two Koreas, who were separated by war 7 decades ago. Seoul says it will be up to Pyongyang to decide the date, menu, agenda, and the format of the talks. These families are allowed to get together for a few days occasionally. The last reunion happened 4 years ago. The North has not yet responded, but recently it turned down an offer of aid from the South in return for denuclearization, Seoul says it will keep making proposals even if Pyongyang rejects this offer. The Seoul Defense Dialogue discussed avenues of international cooperation as South Korea implements a hardline approach for Pyongyang. Frank Smith reports from the South Korean capital, Seoul.
The Seoul Defense Dialogue Security Forum addressed the North Korea issue Wednesday as leading military strategists grappled for a coherent policy toward Pyongyang. In South Korea, President Yoon Suk-yeol's hard line involves strengthening the U.S. alliance and bolstering military capabilities, including a potential preemptive strike.
Kill chain will pre-detect North Korea's nuclear missile launch and be able to interfere with it, blocking any incoming nuclear attacks. And in order to prevent the worst case, we are intensively organizing the defense budget and developing military strategies to prepare a military retaliation.
President Yoon promised to normalize operations of the U.S. anti-ballistic missile system, THAAD, which was deployed in 2017, with new equipment brought in late Sunday night in an attempt to foil local protesters. Yoon has said he would like to deploy more THAAD missile batteries. At the forum, President Yoon's hard line was echoed by Japan. Several forum speakers stressed coordinated sanctions, which have so far failed, yet offered few alternatives.
Settling the issue of North Korea's nuclear and missile programs and ending sanctions against Pyongyang will require bringing North Korea to the negotiating table. But so far, the U.S. and its allies, South Korea and Japan, appear unwilling to provide much incentive for North Korea to re-enter talks.
Also on Wednesday, the nuclear envoys of the U.S., South Korea and Japan met in Tokyo to coordinate strategies seeking to denuclearize North Korea. The U.S. repeated its offer to meet unconditionally with North Korea, while U.S.-led unilateral and U.N. Security Council sanctions remain in place. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Another shooting rampage in the United States. Police in Memphis say a teenager has killed at least 4 people and wounded 3 others over the course of several hours. Police say they've arrested a 19-year-old suspect with 2 weapons following a high-speed chase. They say Kelly Live streamed parts of his spree at 8 different scenes. Gun violence has become a daily occurrence in the U.S. So far this year, nearly 500 people have been killed in shootings and mass murders. But Congress is reluctant to pass gun control legislation as the issue remains politically divisive.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
The role of knowledge-based production in job creation within Iran's economy. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has named the current Iranian year 1401, corresponding to 2022, as the year of production, knowledge-based manufacturing and job creation. In this program, we shall examine the effects of knowledge-based production, unemployment and job creation in Iran. Please stay with us. Tackling the problem of unemployment is a real challenge for economies around the world. Unemployment can spark multiple problems. A lot of social ills have their root in unemployment, and solving the problem of unemployment can solve a host of social, psychological, and economic problems. Unemployment is linked to a number of other problems, and countries which have a chronic unemployment problem usually also suffer from widespread poverty, a rising crime rate, a rising divorce rate, drug trafficking, widespread corruption, and a widening gap between the rich and the poor. Unemployment among the young is usually 2 to 3 times the level of unemployment in other age groups, and those who are at greatest risk of unemployment are usually young university graduates who are looking for their first job or who have just started their first job. In the Islamic Republic of Iran, just like in many other countries, long-term unemployment and low-paid part-time jobs pose a real challenge for the government. Unemployment is the source of many social ills. Studies show that unemployment will remain at the top of a list of problems which governments have to grapple with in the future. The recent coronavirus pandemic also led to a significant rise in unemployment worldwide, and the Islamic Republic of Iran was no exception. The pandemic had its maximum effect on unemployment in the spring of 2020, 1399 under Iranian calendar, when 1.5 million people had become unemployed directly as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. Gradually, this figure was reduced, and in the winter of 2021, or winter of 1399 under Iranian calendar, it reached its minimum figure of 300,000 unemployed. Many economists believe that high-tech science and innovation play a bigger role in economic development of countries compared to volume of investments and a free market. In order to achieve a knowledge-based economy, production, manufacturing, education and training on their own are not enough. Rather, the key point is to use applied science and applied technology to boost production and manufacture. In other words, pure science needs to be made applicable and practical and effectively used to make optimum use of the country's resources. This is one of the great advantages of knowledge-based economy. Increased importance of knowledge provides great potential for countries to strengthen their economic and social development by providing more efficient ways of producing goods and services and delivering them more effectively and at lower costs to a greater number of people. The relationship between economic growth and unemployment shows that there is a high correlation between economic growth rate and a decrease in unemployment rates. An increase in the growth rate increases the unemployment rate or decreases the unemployment rate. Since knowledge-based companies contribute significantly to economic growth in Iran, they also play an important role in reducing unemployment in the country. In a knowledge-based economy, the development of knowledge and skills leads to innovation, which in turn will lead to increase in productivity and increase in revenues, and this will result in a decrease in unemployment. In his statement on the second phase or the second step of the Islamic Revolution, the leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, declared, "The Islamic Revolution became the driving force for advancement of science and technology in this country, and we can see the fruits of this today quite clearly. Today, literally thousands of high-tech, knowledge-based companies are active throughout the Islamic Republic of Iran in such fields as stem cell research, biotechnology, nanotechnology, the nuclear fuel cycle, aerospace and space research, etc. We have seen our non-oil exports grow 60-fold. The number of our production and manufacturing units have grown 10-fold. We have seen the transformation of our industries to modern state-of-the-art industries. And we have become a significant research and development country in the world. The development of knowledge economy is dependent on four main pillars. These are innovation, new technologies, human capital, and enterprise dynamics. Knowledge-based companies produce added value and they create wealth. And this is the driving engine for economic growth. As the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has clearly stated, manufacturing and production through knowledge-based companies will lead to economic growth and a decrease in unemployment.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, this is the member you are listening to. May Allah accept your mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Today we invite you to listen to an English lecture by Brother Amin Rastani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. What we want to do tonight, inshallah, some of the verses of the Quran that the Imams, or not Imams, but Imam Hussein in particular, would use to answer people. So that we get this idea of, oh, this was a culture with the Imams and even with our scholars till today, that they will inject whenever they can and wherever in their speech they can, they will inject verses of the Quran. Through using verses of the Quran, he can get to the parts of these people. And of course, their hearts are stone. فَتَبَّلْ لَكُمْ وَلِمَا تُرِيدُونَ. He curses what they're after. إِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّا إِلَيْهِ رَاجِعُونَ, and so on, he says. On the battlefield, after the battle ensues, every shaheed that would fall, the imam would go next to their body, he would recite Qur'an again. What would he recite? That very, very famous verse. Think about it. In those last moments of your life, to have Imam Hussein next to you, reciting Qur'an for you. Huh. In other words, in the last moments of your life, the thaqalain are next to you. And not just, I have the book of God next to me and an imam next to me. The imam is reciting the Qur'an. From Qur'an in Natiq is coming out Al-Qur'an As-Samit. What more can you ask? Well, they made the sacrifice to deserve this. But inshallah, even us on our deathbeds, yeah, or whenever, however Allah decides to take us, yes, the hadiths tell us that the Ahlul Bayt will come to this person. This person might be upset that they have to leave, but then when they look around, the hadith says that they see Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, they see Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, or they'll see the angels, everything will be so nice, and they'll say, are you ready now? I'm ready, let's go. But this requires a lifetime, inshallah, of servitude, a lifetime of taqwa and obedience. Inshallah. So what's the verse that he would recite? Surah Ahzab, verse 23, مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ رِجَالٌ صَدَقُوا مَا عَهَدُ اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ فَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ قَضَى نَحْبَهُ وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ يَنْتَظِرْ وَمَا بَدَّلُوا تَبْدِيلًا. The Imam isn't just reciting like a surah, Surah Yasin for a mayyit here. He is acknowledging, through this verse you did what you were supposed to do. You lived up to that oath, that covenant that you have with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. What does the verse say in English? It says, there are among the believers many. Think about it, brothers and sisters. You are lying on the plains of Karbala as blood is leaving your body. Imam Hussein is talking to you like this, as if, I hate to say it like this, as if he's looking up to you because you did it before him even. Taking pride in you. These shuhada, there's a reason why on the day of judgment, everyone will be jealous of them. Not jealous, envious of them. I don't know whatever word to use. They will look up to the rank of these shuhada. It is no joke when Imam Ali says that these are ushaq. That this ishq word, you don't find it in the hadith so much. You don't find it in the Quran at all. Because it has a little bit of a negative connotation to it. Ishq versus hub and stuff. But look, man, sometimes that love is so passionate. Imam Ali uses the word ushaq. For who? For the shahada of Karbala. That's how much they're in love with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Alright, so it says here, that the verse says, there are among the believers many men who have been true to the covenant they made with Allah. Of them, some have submitted their souls in martyrdom, and there are some who are waiting to join their brothers in paradise. Imam Hussein is saying, I'm waiting to join you. Give it a little bit of time, I'll be with you. And they have not in the least changed their mind about their covenant. Those who are left behind that didn't quote unquote make it, either short term or long term. Yes, they have not there changed their mind. They still have that focus that I will leave this dunya the way Allah wants me to. So this is the verse they say that Imam Hussein would recite. He could have said, I love you, I will be there for you, I will do shafa'ah for you, yawm al-qiyamah. But there's a nur in Quran when you speak with Quran. Finally, two more verses that Imam Hussein recites after his shahada that we've all heard. It says here, لَمَّا أَصْبَحَ عُبَيْدُ اللَّهِ بْنُ زِيَادٍ. The next morning, after they had brought the heads to Kufa, the prisoners to Kufa, in the morning, Ubaydullah, what he did was بَعَثَ بِرَأْسِ الْحُسَيْنِ فَدِّيرَ بِهِ فِي سِكَكِ الْكُوفَةِ. He sent out the head of Hussein alayhi salam, and they were taking this around in the streets of Kufa. كُلِّهَا, all of the streets of Kufa. وَقَبَائِلِهَا, all the tribes and clans that were in Kufa. Everyone has to see this head. And so it says that Zayd bin Arqam, that famous companion of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wa alihi, he says, مُرَّ بِهِ عَلَيَّ, that the head also passed by me, وَهُوَ عَلَىٰ رُمْحٍ, on a spear. I was in a room, and so as it passed, سَمِعْتُهُ يَقْرَأ, I heard this head reciting, أَمْ حَسِبْتَ أَنَّ أَصْحَابَ الْكَهْفِ وَالرَّقِيمِ كَانُوا مِنْ آيَاتِنَا عَجَبًا. That do you think that the story of Ashabul Kahf is a wondrous sign of God out of his signs? In other words, if you think that that was a great sign of Allah, then this Abu Abdullah al-Hussein is higher than that, is more wondrous than that. And so some of the scholars have spoken about what could this head have meant by this verse of the Quran. That it's saying, look, if they were there for 309 years, and you think that was a miracle, this is something else. They've explained, I have two things here, there must be more. He says, look, they were a youth. They had belief in their Lord. The Quran says this. إِنَّهُمْ فِتْيَةٌ آمَنُوا. They believed in their Lord. What did they do? They said, we're not going to give in to this tyrant ruler that is forcing us to denounce our faith. We're going to leave. Where are you going to go? I don't know. We're going to go somewhere and hide till we see what happens. And so they went and hid. Lo and behold, 309 years have passed. They went to the cave. Allah took care of them. But have you ever seen a head on the spears belonging to the son of the daughter of the greatest of all creation? He was also a person who believed in his Lord, but he gave everything in that path as well. Number one. Another explanation. It says that, and this is something that we see now, 1400 years later, of course, that Imam Hussein alayhi salam, what happened after he died? What happened after his shahada? And what happened after those Ashabul Kahf died? Well, the Quran tells us what happens after they die. It says that the people argued. They said, what should we do? Let's build a monument over them. Some said, لَنَتَّخِذَنَّ عَلَيْهِمْ مَسْجِدًا. We will build a masjid here over them. You get where I'm going right now, right? You get where I'm going? They built a masjid over them so that they can be revered and their memory can live on as a beacon of Tawheed. SubhanAllah. We don't know where their grave is now. But look at the haram of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. A beacon of light that blinds, if you look at it. It blinds. The nur of the haram of Imam Hussein. Look at how it's happening now. Yes, there will be some criticism as well in regards to people going right now in those big masses. But all in all, the point I'm trying to make here is, wow, who can do such a thing? Who can pull something like this off? 1400 years later, now, okay, 14 days later, if something big happens, you know, when someone dies, something happens, people go, they put flowers there and all of that. 1400 years later, it gets even bigger and bigger. Are you kidding me? This is a mu'jiza. أَمْ حَسِبْتَ أَنَّ أَصْحَابَ الْكَهْفِ وَالرَّقِيمِ. 309 years? Oh, we're talking 1400 years and counting. And that's one verse they say that Imam Hussein recited from atop the spheres. And there's another verse that we always recite after our Masa'ib. They say that this is also one that Imam Hussein recited. What is that verse? That he said, وَسَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلَبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ. If I left Medina and I said, رَبِّ نَجِّنِي مِنَ الْقَوْمِ الظَّالِمِينَ, and eventually those ظَالِمِينَ did the ظُلْم that they wanted to me. Here I'm saying, وَسَيَعْلَمُ الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا أَيَّ مُنْقَلَبٍ يَنْقَلِبُونَ. Those who did ظُلْم shall see what will happen to them. Where they're going to end up. SubhanAllah. So this is Imam Hussein and the Quran. Just a little touch. I mean, we just scratched the surface. God knows how much the Imams would refer and cite the Quran.
I swear to Allah, whenever I face troubles in my life, I close my eyes and see your shrine and call the back every time. Oh, Hussein, you're the love of my heart. You are the light of my eyes. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
Statistics and studies showed a number of cases of violence with firearms in the United States has increased in recent years, especially since 2020. As gun violence ramped up during the coronavirus pandemic in America, cities also saw homicide rates rise. And that trend continued in 2021 in many of the nation's most populous cities. The American people are the most armed citizens in the world, and this estimate from the 2021 National Firearms Survey shows that about two-thirds of American adults own a gun. In this regard, we have taken a close look at some of world press and news agencies to shed more light on this matter. Please stay with us. Over the weekend, at least 9 people were killed and 48 wounded in multiple shootings in different parts of the United States. The U.S. Gun Violence Archive says more than 30,000 people have died from gun violence in the United States so far this year. According to CGTN website, in Norfolk, Virginia, police say 2 people were killed and 5 others injured by gunfire at a party on Sunday, 4th of September. On the same day, at least 6 people were injured in a shooting incident in downtown Charleston, South Carolina. In Maryland, a 15-year-old teenage boy was killed and 3 other people injured after 2 gunmen opened fire on Saturday, 3rd of September, inside a convenience store. From Friday, 2nd of September, to Sunday, 4th of September, the city of Chicago in Illinois reported a number of shootings that left 6 people dead and 34 others injured. Last year was the deadliest for the city of Chicago in 25 years, with nearly 800 homicides recorded. The News Times Daily explains more about the story, saying, "Gun and violence have become ubiquitous words. It is appalling. America is known from abroad to have a culture in which the procurement and ownership of guns lead to the pervasive killing of students, worshippers, and innocent bystanders, causing premature death in thousands of people. In the face of this prevalence, gun violence is declared a public health crisis, an epidemic of evil, with hand weapons being the instruments. Every tragic and sorrowful shooting prompts governmental action, followed by disagreements and inaction. Citizens are acting instead. Some activists want an office of gun prevention. Some communities are establishing community intervention programs, starting with young people who are on both ends of the gun, as drivers and victims of violence. U.S. Congress passed the first major gun safety legislation in years. However, even the National Rifle Association, the NRA, stated, "It does little to address violent crime." Sure, access to fewer guns by fewer people means fewer deaths, but gun violence is not going away. With so many guns already in circulation, hundreds of gun laws written and not passed by Congress, and the pressure of the gun lobby make enforcement of the new act questionable about reducing gun incidents. If using hand weapons is of epidemic proportions, efforts to mitigate it are essential. It means getting to the root of why crimes are committed in the first place. Those committing shootings that have been determined to be impulsive and immature youths and adults with problem histories, all who found ease in purchasing guns. Warning signs were there: bullying and being bullied, depression, adverse childhood experiences, stress at home, and an interest in violence and hatred. If these markers are identified individuals can be assessed and managed as early as possible. Researchers about gun violence prevention can use data to identify potential threatening people. The Minnesota Reformer writes, in a country where there are more firearms than people, mass shooting incidents have become increasingly frequent, and gun violence in general is on the rise. More Americans died from gun violence in 2020, the most recent year for which there is data, than any other year on record, and gun violence was the number one cause of death for children in 2020. In the past year, the country has grappled with an onslaught of mass shooting incidents, from a 15-year-old boy shooting and killing four students and wounding seven others at Oxford High School in southeast Michigan, a gunman killing seven people and wounding dozens more during a 4th of July celebration in Highland Park, Illinois, another gunman killing 19 children and two teachers in Uvalde, Texas, the deadliest mass shooting in 2022, and a gunman, an avowed white supremacist, shooting and killing 10 people at a supermarket in Buffalo, New York. Amidst this terror, experts are grappling with why this is happening. The answer is that it is layered. There's the fact that guns are ubiquitous in the United States. In a country of about 330 million people, gun owners possess about 393.3 million weapons, and gun ownership soared during the coronavirus pandemic. The current gun violence crisis comes at a time when gun ownership soared during the pandemic and the number of white nationalist groups jumped by 55% during the Donald Trump presidency. Experts say there are a lot of guns and a lot of anger, much of which is fueled by white supremacy that spreads like a wildfire because of social media in the country right now. Following the shooting incident at Oxford High School, U.S. Democratic lawmakers called on their Republican colleagues to act on legislation meant to curb gun violence, including Senate bills 550, 553, and House bills 5066 and 5069, which would require gun owners to store firearms that could be accessed by minors and children in a locked box or other secure location. Other bills, including bipartisan and bicameral legislation, Senate Bills 678, 679, and House Bills 5371 and 5372, would prohibit individuals convicted of domestic violence misdemeanor from owning a gun or ammunition until 8 years after they have paid any fines and completed their jail term or probation terms. None of these bills have received a hearing. CNN's website elaborates more on the issue, saying, gun violence is rampant in the United States. According to Gun Violence Archive, there have been at least 456 mass shooting incidents in 2022, leaving 30,237 people dead. That's an average of more than 1.8 mass shootings every day so far. The 2018 Small Arms Survey found that there were approximately 393 million firearms in civilian hands in the country, or 120.5 firearms per 100 people. That number is much higher now, given the soaring increase in gun sales in the past few years. U.S. President Joe Biden in July said that a flood of guns was turning American communities into killing fields and vowed to reinstate a ban on assault rifles. The remarks came in a White House ceremony to mark new gun control legislation that he signed on 25th of June. President Biden said, "This has taken too long, with too much of a trail of bloodshed and carnage. The past many years, across our schools, places of worship, workplaces, stores, music festivals, nightclubs, and so many other everyday places, they have turned into killing fields. A group of parents and family members who lost their loved ones in the Uvalde school shooting incident joined gun safety advocates outside the Texas governor's mansion in Austin, Texas, recently, pleading for Governor Greg Abbott to move to raise the minimum age to purchase an assault rifle, AR-15-style rifles. With schools across Texas having already welcomed students back into the classroom, gun safety advocates are calling for the governor to hold a special legislative session so state lawmakers can vote on whether to raise the minimum age for purchasing AR-15-style rifles from 18 to 21 years old. The Texas governor, Greg Abbott, has repeatedly said he would not do so. Abbott has claimed that mental health is at the core of America's gun violence epidemic, not firearms themselves. One of those parents say mental health is part of the problem, but that refusing to acknowledge that guns play a part as well is ridiculous.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is a part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with Friday prayer leaders from across the country in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on July 27, 2022.
If our enemies want to destroy this strong fortress or cause it any harm, what should they do? They have to attack the people's faith. They have to cause controversies regarding their beliefs. That's done by instilling doubts. We shouldn't overlook these doubts. There were people who stood up firmly against arrows and swords, but they were struck down when it came to suspicions and doubts. They could not stand up to that. We have seen these kinds of people. They fought strongly and bravely in the battlefields, but when they faced a doubt, they could not overcome it. It brought about their downfall. This is what doubt does. The purpose of instilling these doubts is to shake the beliefs of the people, who are the country's main force, and to shake the people's beliefs, which are the essential factor in maintaining the country and the Islamic system. Of course, this is because of their enmity. The Islamic Republic has done a great job in facing the West. Now, sometimes we say these things and repeat them, but over time they fade away and are forgotten.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The importance and significance of this content is not paid attention to, or sometimes it is not expressed as well as it should be. But there is a strange reality, the fact that the Islamic Republic has invalidated this 200 to 300 year old claim of the West with its presence and existence. The core of the identity of Western civilization is based on the separation of religion from progress. This is the core point. If you want to advance, you have to put religion aside. It is fine if you want to have some personal beliefs for yourself, but you should not let religion become intertwined with your daily life if you want to progress. This is the essential, central point of the Western civilization's identity. The Islamic Republic has correctly taken aim at this. It has taken aim at this central point and has hit the target. The Islamic Republic started with the slogan of religion. It not only preserved itself, but it progressed, spread its logic in the region and strengthened its roots. A verse from the Quran states, "Have you not seen how Allah has drawn a parable? A good word is like a good tree." The Quran, Surah 14, verse 24. The existence of the Islamic Republic has challenged and proven the falsity of the core identity of Western civilization. That is what irritates the Western powers, and they are angry.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio.